I knew that I couldn't be fully responsible for whatever outcome happened when I went to the police station and told my story, because it was time for me to hand it back.
Welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, where I share tangible techniques to help you embody your femininity, enhance your sex life, and elevate your relationships. I'm your host, Eleanor Hadley, sensuality coach and founder of Sensual Yoga. Now let's unleash your inner sensualista. Hey there, my loves, and welcome to another episode of the Sensuality Academy podcast. I recently had the absolute pleasure of being invited to be one of the first people to read a brand new book all about reclaiming and embodying your authentic sexual expression. Have you ever heard a topic more me? So, of course, naturally, I jumped at the opportunity and totally devoured this book in just one sitting. Today, I'm so pleased to have the author of Wild Honey join me on the show to discuss their brand new book with us. Tamika Wilder, who is also known as the Orgasmic Mama, is a Melbourne-based author, sexologist, and multi-qualified therapist with a deep passion for teaching mums how to reconnect with their pleasure and sexuality. Tamika's work arms women with the tools needed to create lasting and meaningful change inside their intimate relationships and reminds us of what's possible inside our full and authentic sexual expression. As a mother of two, Tamika is well attuned to the importance of creating sex-positive households and helps parents build the confidence to have those chats with their kids and other family members. And now, in words taken directly from the book blurb itself, Wild Honey is living life in such a way that it feels impossible to hide. It's about allowing the full spectrum of your humanness to shine and thrive, riding the waves of uncertainty and being truly awake for it. Authentic sexual expression has nothing to do with your partners, your gender, genitals, or sexual orientation. Our opportunity to create a thriving, pleasure-filled, and dynamic sex life is a fundamental human right. Welcome to Wild Honey, a journey towards radical self-love and acceptance. Drawing on her work as a somatic sex coach, Tamika Wilder takes the reader on a journey from conversations around consent and boundaries to rewriting sexual narratives and embodying your core truth. Tamika approaches it all with a no-holds-barred attitude to help break through the barriers of social conditioning. Wild Honey is full of wisdom, story, poetry, and practical activities to get you out of your head and into your body. Now, if that doesn't sound like a book that is so up my alley, I don't know what does. It is so, so beautiful, and I highly recommend checking it out. In my chat today with Tamika, we dive into discussions prompted by her words in Wild Honey and so much more. I hope that you enjoy listening to our discussion as much as I enjoyed having it. And of course, check out the show notes for details of how you can buy yourself a copy of Wild Honey today. I know you'll love it. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, Tamika. It is so wonderful to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for having me. This is one of my favorite things to do, talk.
Me too. That's the good thing about having a podcast, is I just get to talk all the live long day about things that I find really fascinating. And that is definitely your book. I devoured Wild Honey in just one sitting. It was absolutely wonderful and it resonated very deeply. So thank you for writing it. I'm very excited to chat all about it.
You're so welcome. Thanks for reading it. Glad you liked it, because I know some people won't. And that's just, it's the way it is when you put out something creative, isn't it? It's like, it's not for everyone, but I said what I said.
Exactly. And I think, you know, yes, creatively, not everyone's going to love what you do, but especially when we do things that are around sexuality and different types of relationships and trauma, it's definitely going to be something that hits home for a lot of people, but I think that it's incredibly inspiring. And I think that, you know, if you have a few people here and there that aren't vibing with it, it's kind of a sign that you've done right. Something right, you know?
Right, right. Nice. Nice. Yeah, I like the way you think.
I'm talking to myself as well. Like, it's fine that people don't like what you do sometimes. You're doing well. So tell me, first of all, what was the inspiration to write this book? Where did it come from? Has it been a while in the making?
So I always knew that I was going to write a book, if not many books. That was something that arrived in me kind of a while ago. I didn't know when or how. And I thought it was something that, you know, you only get to do once you're at a certain level in your life where you've got a certain amount of kind of privilege of time or money or expertise that, you know, I didn't necessarily have. But then so Catherine from Debut Books wrote me an email and I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure this lady is asking me if I'll write all of my unique thoughts and feelings and values and ideas about things. Okay. And yeah, so I agreed to do it as a bit of a, I don't know, I like finding my edges. I like pushing my comfort zone. And, you know, I'm a big yes kind of woman to things that feel good in my bones. And that just felt good. So yeah, I was very lucky to be asked to have my voice uplifted. And in terms of coming up with what I was going to write about, it felt really natural just to start from, you know, some of my most difficult stories, I guess, or some of the stories that I found really difficult to tell throughout my life. So I was like, this is a story that needs to now be in print.
Absolutely. And there's a lot that you go into in your book, quite in depth. And it's a really, really beautiful way to understand the importance of sexuality and sexual healing and the somatic relationship to sexuality as well, which I think that a lot of us don't necessarily connect to the way that we're raised. And so I want to actually ask you about the somatic relationship. So for me, in my work in sensuality, I came to this quite organically, being of the senses, tuned into all five senses. It is quite a somatic approach. And reading your work about, you know, the five foundational somatic tools that you talk about, it takes sexuality into such a different light than I think the mainstream tends to view it.
Yeah, I guess the somatic tools also, I guess another way of explaining that is just being with our body and the tools that we can use to connect with our body is an amazing starting place for people looking to reclaim and heal their sexual selves, because it's really personal, it's really private, and it's so specific and unique to us and to you and your body, right? Very often our sexuality is linked to other people. It's linked into relationships, or it's linked into the ways that we learned about sex and other, whereas our somatic understanding and awareness is just about us. And you can't get it wrong when it's just about what your body is feeling, how you're breathing, how you're moving, how you're sounding, how you're self-touching, self-engaging. And it's really the main way that we can snatch our sexuality back from other and outside and bring it in and bring it home and ground it and land it in our senses. And a lot of people dealing with trauma, you'll find that working with our somatic understanding is a powerful way of rewiring and repatterning, because the body remembers and the body stores and holds on to all of our stories. And so the direct route to the body and to repatterning and rewiring is through somatic understanding.
Yeah, I love that you really touched on that in the book, that the body does remember, and that you mentioned that, yes, talk therapy is an important part, but the somatic approach is something that really needs to kind of go hand in hand when you're trying to heal from trauma, yeah, because the body remembers. And so you talk about those five tools, and I'd love to have you elaborate a little bit more on using those tools as a way of self-healing and the ways that people would be able to use them if they have experienced trauma in the past as well.
I guess it is important to go over that point again, that talk therapy is actually the first step, because before we come into the body, we need to understand what beliefs and behaviors we're looking to adjust or to transform. So just jumping into somatic work, especially on your own, without a real understanding of what is there for you to heal and release and be with, yeah, that won't be sticky enough. So getting clear on what you've inherited and what there is there to release is first step. And then the five tools I talk about are breath, sound, movement, conscious touch, and placement of awareness. So someone who might have done lots of kind of conscious breath work before, but it's a bit more simple than that. It's breath is about learning to understand ways that you can breathe really simply that are super profound for your body and that can calm your nervous system. So I don't think we learn enough about how the simple ways of being in our body actually take care of our nervous system, you know? So, and breath is an amazing one. So often we breathe like high up into our chest. We breathe super quickly. We breathe in ways that keep our system in sympathetic dominance, which is the nervous system responsible for fight or flight. And so slowing your breath and coming into conscious breath is like a tiny invitation to start, you know, taking that awareness up. Sound is one that is really, really difficult for a lot of my clients because people think in order to make sounds that aren't language, you need to be able to sing or you need to sound really lovely. And we put all these rules on ourselves. We're actually coming into a raw, mammal-like, non-linear, non-rational version of our sounding and vocalizing is super freeing for the body. It's super connective. So it helps us connect with the vagus nerve. It'll help us connect into our at our cervix and our yoni.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk as well about, you know, yes, those sounds as well as just voicing yourself, your desires, having conversations. I really loved that you touched on that extension of the sound element because, yeah, it's about being able to actually voice what do you want? What feels good? What do I need to feel desired? And it's so much more than just some sounds.
Absolutely. So being able to say what we mean what we say, and have difficult conversations and free our voice in ways that would otherwise have us be disliked or misunderstood or, you know, kicked out of the group, that's an amazing way of just reclaiming life, you know. And I do think that reclaiming sexuality and fully claiming our life is kind of the same thing. You know, we try and live these lives that like compartmentalize all the aspects of our human nature. And I'm looking at really us putting it all together and being able to run the full spectrum of our human existence. And sometimes that means saying hard things. Sometimes that means aggravating somebody else or fully claiming your truth and being able to stand in the flames that come afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like this book is even an extension of you just speaking your truth and kind of actually making it known.
Totally. Yes, it is.
So I have a lot of things to flow on from that, but I'd love you to continue on the somatic tools, the five foundational ones, just for anyone who's like, okay, what are these things? So we've got the breath, we've got the sound.
So movement is another one. And again, movement's one that we pop in a box. We think that movement means dancing or looking a certain way in order to move our bodies in a way that feels really good and nourishing for our system. It means letting go of the way we look, actually. And it means coming into reverence for our own bodies. And it means having the awareness that, you know, if you have four working limbs and the blood is pumping through you and your heart is beating and you can breathe, we are blessed, right? And we sit around and we make ourselves so small inside of our movements. And it's like, this is the way that's acceptable and this is not acceptable. And what I'm asking inside of this movement thing is that we park all of that and go, what feels good for my body? What's unique to my body? What is going to make me feel alive? What cracks me into a full embodied expression of this magnificent vessel? So yeah, the movement piece is just, and you know, I guess taking it down a notch from that, put on a piece of music that makes you feel good and move your body in such a way that is not performative, in such a way that just feels connective and feels blissful and feels real and true for you. And that movement will unlock and keep unlocking this connection to your body's wisdom and your self-soothing.
Oof. Everything you just said just kind of gave me chills. It's for me, the movement piece is the most wonderful, powerful way to connect and get, as you say as well in your book, getting out of your head and into your body. And I mean, for me, I teach so much of sensual movement and allowing ourselves to get into that flow and just do what feels good. And I love that you mentioned that you can just put a song on and dance, or sorry, just move in a way that feels embodied and not performative. And this is like the cornerstone of my work as well, is just embody that. What does your body want to do? What feels good? We don't have to worry about what it looks like, what our body can do, but what feels good. Following that is just so powerful.
That's it. And then it could just be stretching to begin with. It could just be like really kind of you find yourself stretching or moving in such a way that's kind of weird. And it's like, oh, okay, this is an abstract version of a shape that my body wants to make. Allowing that is important.
That's actually really, really powerful. The word that you use there, allowing, actually allowing that and not holding ourselves back and thinking, oh, I'm not meant to do this. You talk a lot about, you know, this conditioning that we go through. At the start of the book, you talk about this childlike innocence and just sexuality being wrapped up quite a lot in innocence, because it is like, I don't need to think about these expectations or these judgments or these perceptions that have been placed on me. Just be curious and allow yourself to move or do anything in the way that feels good, purely because it feels good. I noticed, like, even when I was reading the book, I was just sort of lying in bed and I just like wanted to do little movements side to side as I was reading some of the language. It's quite poetic the way that you write. I was like, oh yeah, it's really juicy. And so I'm just like swaying and you have that little voice. Like, I noticed this voice in the back of my head that was like, what are you doing? Don't be silly. Just sit there and read like an adult. And I'm like, no, I will not.
No. Good. Yes. Childlike innocence, play. Yeah. Letting go of, I don't know, whatever's trying to keep us small. But it's also just like, I love the idea of kind of breaking the rules and like rewriting right and wrong and like detangling from habits that there's no use subscribing to those, you know? So it's like, sit and read like an adult. It's like, what for? Who said? Who's watching me? Like, it's okay. And it's not about creating moments in the world where you feel unsafe or you're in direct threat or you're, you know, threatening anybody else. But in those moments where self-talk and you're just by yourself, it's like, yeah, let's reclaim that and let's just have a bit of fun with ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, I taught a class recently and I had a student say to me, I always want to move like this, even when I'm at home, like in my bedroom, but I get embarrassed, even though there's no one around. And like, I understand, because we're constantly self-censoring, right?
Totally.
And that permission piece is what's missing. Like, we have permission, right, to do what feels good.
We do. But if there's a belief there, you know, that person, it's like, well, what belief do you have in that moment about yourself? Like, what are you making more true than how you want to move or how you want to be in this moment? You know, we make these beliefs more true than our desire. So we need to contact those beliefs sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so powerful. I love that. And one of the things that you mentioned in your book about these tools and the use of the tools, you said the most simple practices are often the hardest to carve out time for, but they're also often the most powerful.
Yeah.
This one just hit me.
Yeah, because we get bored with ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get like addicted to the big and the intense and the, well, my coach said I got to do it like this and so I better, you know, make sure it's a two-hour practice and I'm lighting candles. And we just, the simplicity, I think, that we need to remember is like, it's simple and therefore it's more important. And at times more powerful, simple breaths, simple movements, simple sounds that break the mold. And even, you know, because I work a lot with mums, it's like if you set a timer for 6 or 7 minutes and put your hand on your belly and breathe, you may think that it's like nothing, but actually that doing that every day is like rewiring.
I think those little practices can be, like you said, there's so much more powerful in many ways than those big two-hour full-on rituals. And I think that sometimes we can use that as an excuse for not doing it, because we're like, oh no, but it has to be this perfect thing on the full moon, you know, and I have to like face east and I have to do all these things. You're like, just chill out and like smell a flower. I don't know.
Exactly. Simplicity. Yeah. And that's in there because I need to remember that, right? It's like, Tamika, go slow, do less. Like, it's okay. It's perfectly imperfect.
Yeah, I feel the same. I go through these kind of ebbs and flows where I'm like, oh no, I need to do more. And then I get overwhelmed and I go, oh no, actually, remember simplicity? Yes. Okay, that's where it's at. And then you're like, oh, I'm enjoying the slowness. But then somehow this internalized capitalism kind of creeps in and it's like, no, you should do more. You've got to prove. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'll do small things. Then I burn out and it's an interesting cycle to observe.
I think our sexuality really appreciates us doing the small and the subtle. Yeah, because again, it's like outside of us and like in the media and in pop culture and in our culture, sex is so like big and raw and like dynamic and evocative and taboo. And I think we can often get caught up in this like ideal around like what looks sexy and how can I, you know, buy another vibrator and how can I get bigger with my sex and even more expressed. And it's like, yeah, no, the subtlety is where it's at with reclaiming sexuality gently.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a similar thing that I often talk about. The more that you can be sensual in everyday life, the better your sex is going to be because you're going to be tuned in and turned on. It's like you've just kind of turned everything up into technicolor.
Yes.
You notice those subtle things more.
Totally. It sounds like you use the word sensuality for probably the way that I use eroticism, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And talk about everyday eroticism and like tuning to the erotic potential in every single moment, which can be so much fun and really brings us into presence in every moment.
Amazing. Can you talk a little bit more about your definition of eroticism and how you can make everyday things more erotic, what that looks like?
So it's almost like someone who's not used to using the word eroticism or someone who has an understanding of erotic being specifically about sex or sexuality, or if you think erotic, then you think genitals. It's like, no, less about that and more about allowing everything to be, allowing you to be in wonder about everything, allowing you to use your imagination, allowing you to come into enough presence with everything around you that you are engaging your senses. And it's permission to allow your erotic lens forward in the mediocre and the mundane. So for example, I'm sitting here at this desk and it's pretty dusty and like, I don't know, messy, and there are cords and stuff, but I could engage with all of the things on this desk erotically, and it might just mean me closing my eyes and rubbing my hand along one of these cords and feeling the temperature and then coming into some breath. And it's play. It's like allowing play to guide us. This is how I see eroticism. And then from that place, you can move it into more of a sexually focused eroticism, which can then inform the way that we show up in our relationships and show up, you know, for ourselves sexually. And a lot of people I work with want to understand how to love sex more so they can connect in their partnerships more authentically. And so it does start with re-understanding, you know, your relationship with erotic in everyday life.
Beautiful. I love that. And I feel like there's a lot of people listening now who will be really rethinking just like their desk, anything around them. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. I can actually tune in a little bit more. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautifully said. So another part of your book that really, really stuck with me was your description of a yes is not a yes if you can't safely say no. So this element of consent and talking about what is an embodied yes and what is an embodied no and what that looks like and how to determine between the two, it was a really fascinating way of seeing the consent conversation. And I know that this is a big conversation at the moment, and especially given that we have been kind of programmed with this language of like, oh, no is no, no means no, but also there's a lot more to it. So I'd love you to talk a little bit more about an embodied yes, how we find that.
So very often when we think about consent, we are using language, we're using words yes and no, and we have a very cognitive understanding of what these words mean, right? So it's very easy for us to get caught up in understanding consent just with our minds, when actually to teach people how to access their embodied yes and their embodied no means teaching people how to access their somatic understanding, somatic self-understanding, access and feel the truth in your body. So that's the difference between a yes that comes from the mind and a yes that actually comes from your body. So there's a thing that happens, which is called incongruence, where someone says, hey, can I give you a kiss on the cheek? And you look at that person and you're like, oh, yeah, I don't see why not. Like, you seemed like a safe and lovely person, and I've let you kiss me on the cheek many times before. And you go, yes, my mind says yes, because of course, why not? That makes total sense. And you say yes. But somewhere inside of your body, there's a little twisting in your gut, or there's a tiny little piece of evidence for a no, or just like, oh, why does my mind say yes, but my body's like, I'm not fussed on that today. And that's incongruence. And so in that moment, actually, because of maybe who that person is in front of you, or because of the way you've interacted with them before, your mind says yes because it can't find any logical evidence for a no, but the whole while your body is saying no. So the thing we need to learn is actually to come into sensation more, and to stop and to wait and go, I'm just going to check in. And you might close your eyes and take a breath, and that little tiny twist in the gut, or that little tiny lump in your throat, is actually like, oh no, not today. So that yes is actually no, but you didn't know how to listen to it. Yeah. And I think this happens because of the way that we learn to please people. I think this happens because language, you know, vocal language is given kind of the most weight in the way that we communicate, when actually we need to put far more weight in our somatic understanding and teach young people how to access how their body feels, not what their mind says, you know.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense? Is that?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I'm sure that everybody listening is really resonating with that as well, because I'm sure we've all had experiences where we've said yes, or we just haven't said no. And it has been a no, like truly it has been a no, but we haven't voiced it in some way or another.
Oh, I was just going to say, another thing that happens is that it starts off as a yes, and then 7 seconds later it becomes a no, and then we don't know how to find our voice to correct and to course correct and to change, because we're also told that changing our mind or being high maintenance or saying one thing and then actually, you know, flipping is all of these things. There are all these judgments actually on who you are and what that makes you if you change your mind or you adjust. So there's active work to be done to squash all that too.
Definitely. And I think that there's this hyper focus on logic and rationalism, because we live in this quite energetically masculine patriarchal society that does put so much value on being rational, being logical, and using your mind instead of listening to your body. And we're so disconnected from that body. So I suppose these somatic tools will allow us to tune in and determine, what is my yes? What does that feel like? And then using our voice to voice it.
That's it. Absolutely. And taking space when we need to. There's no rush. You know, I think some people also, it's like, oh, I better quickly come up with my yes or no. Consent takes time, and we have to, take some extra breaths and slow everything down to get the full embodied response.
I've never thought of it like that, that consent takes time. That's such a beautiful way of looking at it. And I know that a lot of people listening now will feel the same way, but also potentially wonder, how do I take my time when the person that I might be with is not willing to wait, not connected to that spaciousness that is needed.
If you are with someone who's unwilling to get enthusiastic, embodied, authentic consent, then are you actually with the right person? Like, are they someone who deserves access to you in your body, your energy, your time, your frequency, your eroticism? Your genitals? Probably not. And this all comes back to self-worth. It all comes back to I deserve full and enthusiastic, joyful, pleasure-filled, pleasure-centered, consensual sexual interactions. And if you're working on a belief that says otherwise, then that's where you start. So adding take your time into consent is like, I'm adding the belief that I'm worth all this time. I'm adding the belief that actually my sexual interactions are really profound and meaningful and are worth this time. Having a conversation with someone before you are in a space where there's touch or interaction in that way and go, all right, so let's talk about consent. Let's talk about time. Let's talk about all the things that I need to feel safe and like, hell yes, to this interaction. Part of that might be time.
Definitely. And I think that this is really just a total reframe to the way that we've been brought up and to how many people, particularly those of us who identify as women, experience sexuality and relationships with people who may not be fully embodied. A lot of us haven't done this work. A lot of us are very new to this work. A lot of us haven't even heard of this work. And so it's understandable, I guess, that a lot of us are totally disconnected. But I suppose the conversation that we're having is, and that people are listening to right now, is a step on the journey towards really reclaiming your own sensuality or sexuality or eroticism and your boundaries as well.
Yes. And boundaries is a whole kind of another arm of this conversation, I think, because boundaries and consent are lumped in together because they are foundational pieces that we need. But I think that, and this is obviously, as you know, in Wild Honey, I talk about the difference between both, that having a boundary for things that you will and will not accept and having a boundary even inside of yourself are really amazing ways, yeah, to start healing and leveling up your self-sexual relationship.
Definitely. Boundaries and consent. I feel like they're things that have really been huge topics of conversation in the media lately with lots of different things going on, which we won't dive into fully, but it's something that I think a lot of people don't have much awareness on, don't have much understanding of our own, how to assert them. And that comes down to a huge factor is our lack of sexual education. I know you say in Wild Honey that you often talk about your work being sex education for adults. It's like filling in the gaps of what we missed when we were growing up. And so I'd love you to talk a little bit more about what you feel would be so helpful for kids being raised these days to actually know about their sexuality.
I feel like firstly it starts with understanding your body and understanding the sensations of your body and allowing our young people to remain embodied. So instead of sitting everyone down in a classroom and like telling everyone to stop wiggling and stop talking like that and stop squealing, and it's like we need to keep everyone a little bit free inside of their body so they feel what it means to be in their body, because that's the first step in sex education. What do you feel like in your body? Not what you're deciding to explore based on your mind. It's what are you deciding to explore based on your body? Secondly, adding pleasure into sex education. So a lot of people are going into experimental and curious stages as they enter their, you know, young adolescence, and they're deciding to inquire about what feels good from a place of not understanding pleasure. So if we put pleasure as part of like sex ed, then that's where it starts, instead of starting that, you know, with someone or with a group of people that don't necessarily have your best interest at heart. You know, we need to educate about pleasure. Like, sex is not just for procreation anymore. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, we all know that, but a lot of people deny it. Sex feels good. It can feel good. We have a lot of capacity for pleasure. And I fully agree. I think that pleasure as part of our, like, the syllabus is hugely, wildly important. Bloody hell, it's taboo. Like, nobody wants to admit that, like, they masturbate and that it's actually fine and you're not going to go blind.
I know. I guess religion has a lot to answer for, and different patriarchal structures, and, you know, even I guess, political structures and, you know, anyway, it's probably a whole nother podcast talking like historically about marriage and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I think in order for people to really start understanding that pleasure needs to be included, they need to understand their own shame and their own conditioning around what has made sex so inherently wrong or bad or dirty or misunderstood inside of our culture. And I guess that's why we exist and why our work is important, because we've got to keep having like bold and brave convos saying, actually, that's expired. Like, enough of this. Enough. Like, let's go. We need to help future generations, actually.
Absolutely. And something that you brought up in Wild Honey was you recalled your own experience with sexual trauma and abuse, and you recall being unable to access your no, which we've spoken about, the embodied no versus the embodied yes.
Mm.
And you also, what I found quite interesting was that you mentioned that you would have preferred restorative justice for your abuser, an opportunity to sit down and have a conversation and get an apology, as opposed to the systems that are in place. And you recalled how you wondered what lack of sex education they may have received to enact such abuse on others, which I found to be such a fascinating thing, because that's the whole point, isn't it? That we might not have received great sex education, pleasure education, and there's a lot of shame and trauma around us.
Absolutely. And it's probably even beyond sex education for that person. Like, it's just who wasn't looking after that young man? Our culture. Yeah. You know, totally. Who wasn't looking after his parents or whatever system or structure led him to believe that that's how he got his power and that's how he got love and affirmation. So it's not even just about missing sex education for him, and for any young person who decides that that's the way they want to go about living their life. It's like, they were born of our culture. We have a responsibility to take care of them and make adjustments so there are safe places for people to go about their sexuality, about their urges, about their self-esteem, about their shame, about their own trauma. And so, yes, it was difficult with all of the values that I have around restorative justice and around how putting perpetrators in jail is like this band-aid. This is a terrifying kind of band-aid that perpetuates a cycle of shame and violence against another family. We need to go like 10 steps backwards. Like, when our young boys, our young anyone is 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, like, that's when we need to be really taking care of people, because when we don't and they slip through the cracks, then these people grow up to, yeah, have a misunderstanding of how they're to assert their power in the world, and then those things happen and then they go to jail. So it was, I knew that I couldn't be fully responsible for whatever outcome happened when I went to the police station and told my story, because it was time for me to hand it back. And if I had have held on to it because I would have preferred restorative justice, or because I didn't want to be in the cycle of violence, then, you know, that wasn't going to be okay for me and my system and my journey of reclamation. So that's how it had to happen. But I don't believe in it. I don't. I knew that when I made that phone call, and actually the first phone call I made, I don't know if this is in Wild Honey, I said, what happens if I come in and I tell this story? Like, can I say what happens next in terms of, you know, the legal system?
Mm.
And no. You know, they said, no, you don't. You know, what happens next is we take your statement, and then based on whatever you say, we go and arrest this person, and then off we go, like, into the system.
Yeah. It was such a profound thing to read, that just that reframe of what that looks like, and the words that you used, handing this story back, because it doesn't have to stay with you. It doesn't have to, you know, be a huge part of you anymore. I loved that, just that imagery. The poeticism of, like, I'm handing this back now.
Yeah, totally. Because I guess part of me holding on to it, thank you, would always be like me protecting the perpetrator, because I don't believe that I wanted him to be in jail or to be punished in that way. But I was like, cool, I can spend my life in this protection mode, which is actually part of what led me to, you know, be unable to access, you know, to interact with him in the way that I did at 12 and 13 years old. Mind you, I'm a child at that point, so I wouldn't expect that we have those tools because education, etc. Yeah, I knew that I couldn't keep protecting, so.
Another part of Wild Honey that I really loved were these moments where you almost pause to describe how you were feeling somatically in your body as you were typing. And I noticed for myself, it almost encouraged me to stop and consider how I was feeling in my body while reading that. And I feel like that was quite intentional.
Yes. Yeah, great. As I was writing, I was obviously quite aware of my embodied feelings the whole time, and sometimes it was really uncomfy, other times it was really intense and important and deep and meaningful. My heart was racing and I was like, oh, it feels really important to actually add all of this. If I'm encouraging people to be embodied and be somatically aware, then it's like have an insight of what somatic language actually sounds like. Because so often I ask people, like, well, what does that feel like to you? And they go, oh, I'm scared or frustrated or a bit nervous. I'm like, but what does that feel like? And what does that feel like? Somatic language is far less practiced. So I feel upset. It's like, cool. And what does that, what's the sensation of upset? Oh, hot, lump in my throat, better. So, yeah, I wanted to give an example of somatic language in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really powerful. I noticed it so deeply. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, how am I sitting? How am I breathing? And, you know, the way that you used it, you were describing how your body was feeling your somatic experience as you were writing. And it gave me an extra little insight, an added little layer of like, oh, wow, okay, that's what this recollection is bringing up in Tamika. Wow, okay, I feel like I can understand that slightly more than I did beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, beautiful. I'm glad that worked for you in that way. And also, like, you know, to be honest, sometimes it wasn't necessarily the content before or after that little snippet. Sometimes it was just like, oh, I'm trying to write here and the kids are like climbing on me, or like, you know, someone's just spilt milk on my computer, or right. So it's literally just a snapshot of whatever in that moment is occurring, then like a bit of that was there. So
yeah, I think it's a beautiful way to like a little insight into what somatic language looks like, because as you said, a lot of people aren't familiar with talking about their feelings and their actual feelings. we think about feelings as emotions, but not often as the actual physical, yes. I feel this in my body. And yeah, a really, really powerful way of looking at that and tuning in so much more. I felt like the book was, it did feel like a somatic experience as opposed to just a logical, I'm reading some words on a page, you know?
Beautiful. Great. I'm very glad.
So on that note, I would like to say thank you so, so much to you, Tamika, for writing this book, for coming and chatting with us today. And for anybody who is listening and wants to know more about you and how they can work with you, find you on socials, can you please share?
Yes, thank you, Eleanor. Absolutely. Come over to The Orgasmic Mama on Instagram or theorgasmicmama.com. I am opening a 12-month container for mums who want to reacquaint themselves with their sex and their pleasure. Yeah, it's a big online course with live events, actually. So that's at my website. Or you can find me on Facebook, Tamika Wilder. Usually if you search The Orgasmic Mama, I'm going to come up. So
amazing.
Yeah, and would love you to buy the book, obviously. I think Eleanor, you'll link it somewhere in these
absolutely
notes.
Absolutely.
And we'll spray it all over Instagram.
Definitely.
One for you and one for a friend maybe that you think needs a bit of a shake up.
Such a great idea. What a beautiful gift. I will absolutely link all of the things in the show notes for you. You'll find a link to buy the book, and I hope that you enjoy. And thank you so much for coming and joining us today.
Thank you, Eleanor. I loved it. Really good chat. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Sensuality Academy podcast. Before you go, I want to invite you to join the waitlist for my much anticipated upcoming online course, The Art of Seduction, Exploring Empowered Lap Dance. In this course, I'll be guiding you through the pillars of seduction, how to become a super seductress, maintaining presence through enticing eye contact, magnetizing movement, plus the foundations of creating a luscious lap dance and a sultry striptease. Having toured this workshop around the country with rave reviews, trust me, you want to be in this course. Launching soon, waitlist students will have bonus content plus priority enrollment. To get yourself on the waitlist, head to thesensualityacademy.com/seduction. In the meantime, you can follow my sensual musings over on Instagram at Eleanor Hadland.